Mark, can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I have hit,
I hit
record, people, so thank you for all the emails. Thank you.
I just got a fruit salad juice on my computer.
Well, then we probably have at least a couple minutes to go.
We're done?
Well, I'm just waiting for your computer to fry.
I don't know what the fuck's going on with my computer. It's not what it used to be. Now that I have a new hard drive in it.
What do you mean, it's not good?
I don't know, man. It seems to be losing emails. Like, I get my email through the iMac thing that gets it through the AOL, and this thing's missing, and it's, I don't know, fucking have to rely on the memory of these things. It's all fucking stupid, man. I just wanted, how about just on paper? I want to go back to letter writing. Enough of this text messaging and emailing. And
you want to go back to letter writing or letter receiving? I mean, you could be, be writing
both.
Letters
just
right now. Sounds like you just want letters to come to you.
Yeah, I just don't want to have to worry about things disappearing.
Things disappear, you know.
And me not understanding how to get them.
People are saying that technically the show is doing great right now. I think what's clear is that you have a internet problem at your house.
All right. So why don't we make some money doing the show, and I'll do whatever is necessary to fix that problem.
We will, actually. we need to make an initial investment, apparently.
Right.
But we could talk about that later.
What do you mean? What's the initial investment?
We have to set up the back end in such a way so that we have a means in which to sell the show. But you know, it's also, we should probably wait and see what happens over the next couple of weeks, because
what do you think's going to happen over the next couple of weeks? We're going to go more broke?
I would say that there's a 50-50 chance that one of us is going to end up signing a deal where we're not allowed to do it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I think there's, I think for the most part, I'd say there's at least a 50-50 chance that the 3-6 slot will be you or I.
You're saying that we're up for the same job?
Yeah. But I'm saying that there's a 50-50 chance that you or I will get it. I do not think that Ron Reagan or Kuby, or although Roseanne Barr was pretty impressive, but not necessarily in the way that you would want. Are you? Is your computer wired right now, or are you wireless?
I'm wireless.
There you go.
Actually, as I recall, the last time that we did it from my patio, and it was also pretty good.
I don't think that's the case.
So I think something had transpired. No, it was. Hold on a minute.
Well, Well, Marc Maron has left the building, ladies and gentlemen.
What the fuck?
Barack Obama. Barack Obama.
It's coming, Anagram, for us. I've decided I'm going to make these ringtones. Ways of raising cash.
Poopy, poopy, poop.
What are you doing?
Poopy, poopy, poop.
Wait, what do you mean? Anna Granforth's Lionel is on Laura Flanders' videos? What?
Dude, one second.
I'm not talking to you.
Jesus.
I'm talking to Anna Granforth. Do I want a link? Oh, gosh, no. Log is super slow. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you, MM Rules. Anna Granforth, send me an email with the link. I don't know if I can see that. My head might.
God.
Is the new, am I thinking about getting the new next iPhone? Yeah, I guess so. But right now, I'm not thinking about making any punishment, any purchases. What were you looking for?
Dude, this window's. I was trying to open a window, and sometimes at hotels, you can't. And in this hotel, you can open the window all the way. This is a good hotel. I could jump out this window.
How many floors up are you? One?
Six. Six.
Oh, that actually would do some damage.
That would do all the damage. All right, so...
six floors would do it, buddy.
See, now you're
pinching. Is my audio lower right now? It is. My audio is lower. All right, wait a second. I can fix that. How's that, folks? How's that? Better? How about this? Is that better? Oh, yeah, I think it is. All right, so, Mark, say something.
So that makes it uncomfortable. So now, what, you tell me we're up for the same fucking job?
But you didn't know that?
Not really.
Well, you didn't pick up on the fact that we were both auditioning for 3 to 6?
No.
Are you serious?
I don't anticipate. I don't know what the hell to do with it. What's going on?
I don't know what that means. You don't know what to do with what?
I don't know. I was just in Portland.
Okay. What happened in Portland? I heard you drew 75,000 people in Oregon. That's pretty impressive.
No, that was Charlie Murphy the week before us. Charlie
now,
Murphy drew 75,000 people at the McManus Baghdad Theater.
Where did Charlie Murphy, where do I know him from?
The Chappelle Show. He's Eddie Murphy's brother.
Oh, yeah, he's funny.
Yeah, he was there a few weeks before us. He drew 75,000 people. Apparently, if black people just show up there ever, the town comes out.
Can you imagine if John McCain had 75,000 people come out to see him? I mean, just imagine. If John McCain had 75,000 people who came out to see him, can you just, I mean, it would be, the media would basically say this race is over, folks. We want to collect a pool. We want everybody to contribute $25 to Barack Obama to send him on his way. The race is over. There's no need for an election. If John McCain had 7,500 people show up at a rally, I think you'd see that type of news coverage. Never mind 75,000. Unbelievable. I don't know if McCain's going to make it to November.
I talked to a Republican. I talked to a Republican in a cigar shop. And I said,
one of the few last refuges you find them now, actually.
Well, I told him, I said, I don't think you guys really want it. I think that this guy was the only guy you had, and you're just rolling him out there, and you don't give a shit, because you know that whoever takes the helm on this one has got a flaming bag of shit on his hands. And if you can hang all the problems of the world on the next Democrat, you guys could run things for the rest of time. And he said, oh, you're on to our plan. I don't think I think he's just saying that. He didn't look important. He wasn't even that smart necessarily.
Yeah, just because he's in a cigar shop does not mean he's controlling the Republican Party. But I do think that the conservative wing of the Republican Party basically wants McCain to lose because they see a danger to their movement. If he loses, they can say it's because he's not conservative enough. And
yeah, but also, Sam, I mean, it seems to me that who the fuck would want to be president now? I mean, the conservative branch, I mean, if they take 4 years to regroup and figure out, they can take 4 years to figure out how to hang everything on the next Democrat. That's their gamble. I mean, this is going to be a ridiculous presidency. It's going to be very difficult. And if they can blame a Democrat for everything, if they can just take 4 years to figure out how they can make it all that guy's responsibility or that woman's responsibility, or that's a long shot. Why wouldn't they do that?
Well, I mean, first off, something like 75%, 80% of the American public feels the country's on the wrong track right now. 80% say, or 70-something percent say they don't approve of George Bush's job. I mean, we're still 7 months away, 8 months away from when Obama would take the presidency. I don't think they're going to be able to hang what happens next on the Democrats. I think they're going to try, but I think you'd have to be a fool to make that straight out gamble. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I'll tell you there is a.
But they did it. They continue to, and they've done it with Clinton for fucking as long as it's been. I mean, I'm not saying that they're. Well, I mean, I'm not talking about what's happening in the next 7 months. I'm talking about they're looking forward, thinking that if they get a Democrat in there for 4 years, given the state of the economy and the state of the world and what may or may not happen in those next 4 years, I think the Republican gamble is essentially that. Look, we'll sit this one out and we'll see what this guy or this woman can do in the next 4 years. And then if it's anything like how we can hang it on Clinton and how we blame Clinton for everything. Everything that happened, that maybe we'll take the gamble and be able to do that.
I think that's why they wanted Clinton. I think that's why they wanted Hillary Clinton. But there isn't the same visceral hatred of Barack Obama that there was.
But I'm saying that their gamble, what I'm saying is their gamble, not unlike our gamble, is that, I'm going to vote for Obama. I don't know exactly what Obama can or can't do or will or won't do as a leader. I know that Obama is going to get into office and will immediately have to sit down with generals, will have to sit down with a new staff, will have to surround himself with intelligent people that share his vision, but will have to begin making compromises immediately. I don't know what that looks like. Well, I am willing to gamble on that. What I'm saying is they are willing to gamble on the fact that they don't know that either, but one thing they do know is that this country is heading into a world of shit, and that shit is going to far outlast the 4 years of the next president. So their gamble is, well, maybe the Senate will tip. Maybe we'll get a big enough majority for things to just flow smoothly. But I think what they're saying is that our gamble is this thing's not going to get any better in the next 4 years. And no matter who's in office, they're not going to be able to pull it out. And whatever bad happens, we'll just blame on them. And if anything good happens, we'll say, hey, if the table was set for that to happen.
Yeah, that may be, but that's more of a post facto rationalization. The fact of the matter is, the Republicans can't win in November.
I know.
They can't win in November. So, I mean, taking that attitude certainly makes sense at this point. if you're the Rush Limbaugh 25%ers who still support George Bush, this is the perfect anecdote. I mean, this is the antidote, I should say. I mean, because this is the, rather than having to own up to the fact that conservative policies failed the country, they can now say that John McCain lost because he wasn't conservative enough. And this is their excuse for abandoning the Republican Party short term. So, but the real danger for Republicans, I would think, is if things get as bad as you're talking about, if things do really bottom out, and we're not, well, I don't think we're close to that point. I mean, or to the extent that we are close to that point, I don't think there's any general awareness that we've really bottomed out. I mean, when we get gas prices at $7 a gallon, probably by next summer, maybe, you know, this guy from Goldman Sachs said that in 6 to 24 months, you're going to see $200 a barrel, which will be $7 at the pump. When you get to that point and the economy comes to a standstill, the danger for Republicans is that suddenly there is a wider, you know, it's sort of the flip side of the shock doctrine. Because if this economy gets as bad as some people think it might, you're really susceptible to some major political change. And what the Republicans are looking at is a 50-50 chance at this point, maybe even bigger than that, that the Democrats are going to have a 60-plus majority in the Senate, that they're going to have a veto-proof majority in the House, and you're going to have a Democratic president. And if the fucking bottom falls out a year into Obama's presidency with a Senate and a House that is Democratic, you could see some version of a New Deal. It won't be as significant.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I understand what you're saying.
70 years later, the Republicans are still trying to get rid of Social Security.
I know, you know, but I think you're being optimistic, given the American mindset. I appreciate what you're saying, but I think you're being tremendously optimistic. The economy, and I don't want to be a doomsayer, but the economy is going to bottom out. I mean, I'm talking to people, friends of mine, on the air once a week occasionally, that are in trouble.
No longer on the air once a week. But I'm not being optimistic about the American public. I'm being a little bit cynical, that it's going to take a bottoming out before they are willing to accept some wholesale political change. And then they're going to just say,
All right. What I'm saying is that, I have to agree with you, and I'm excited about it. But what I'm saying is that despite whatever happens, and where we started with this, I'm all for a new deal. I'm all for some civic service. I love some nationalized health care, some socialized health care, I'll even call it. That all sounds great to me. I just like a job that I enjoyed. But
there's a lot of people who just
That's right. I'm getting to that point, as you can see. You know, we're both up for the same job. But,
what?
Yeah. I just want a job, Sammy.
Yeah, I hear you, dude.
Yeah, I'm serious, buddy. But I think that their gamble, as I said before, if this is a organization that spent 30 years, you know, putting a machine into place to completely undermine any social growth or any sort of liberal or progressive idea on all fronts, that whatever they're going to do in the next 4 years, while they let this thing happen, or obviously that's not the right way to phrase it because they don't really have anybody else to run. But I think they're sitting this one out on the idea that the American people will hit bottom, get excited, do whatever's necessary to get the country back on track, and then start to lose hope. And then they'll come in with their hate in 4 years and figure out a way to blame everything on the Democrat and rejigger the entire system back into totalitarianism. But that's being negative, and I don't want to be negative because I, too, have seen Barack Obama stand in front of thousands and look just out there, just over everybody else, into that new place in the sky where everything is good and hope is real and we can move forward as a country that believes in itself.
You know, what's interesting is Obama is telling the major campaign donors, that we don't, they're basically leveraging all the value that people feel they get from big donors get from contributing to presidential campaigns. They're basically telling them no outside groups. This has been sort of like an under-the-radar story that people are writing about on the blogs, and I'm seeing a lot of activity. There's a lot of angry people who have outside organizations. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because, in some respects, it's sort of killing the infrastructure that people are trying to build to exist when Democrats aren't in control. But, dude, after Missouri and Louisiana and Illinois, the loss of those Republican congressional districts, I mean, there are people who are predicting. Tom Cole, the head of the National Republican Congressional Committee, is predicting a bigger swing than happened in 06. I mean, it's going to swing hard. The question is how many of those Democrats are going to be progressives, and how much? How is the American public going to react when, you know, gas gets to $7 a gallon? I mean, when gas gets to $7 a gallon, it's going to really, things are just going to just a standstill. I mean,
yeah, look, Sam, I think
blueberries and strawberries right now.
Hey, Sam, I think that I understand all that, and I hope that I really hope that you're right. But, I mean, you know, when cigarettes went up to $6 a package, that's very nice. Good for you. Why don't you figure out how to make gas out of those?
Actually, I was thinking about fermenting them. But go ahead.
There you go, making some booze. But, I mean, I think that ultimately what we're seeing now is the level of denial that American people are capable of, if they have credit, is profound. And I think that even the fact that, you know, when cigarettes went up to $6 or $7, I know plenty of people are smoking still. They may have cut down. They may have figured out another way around it, or they may mix up their addiction time with other things. But I think ultimately that as long as this economy is built on debt, the amount of time that people can stay in denial is profound.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, I hope you're right.
There is a debt crisis. That's the point. That's why all the shit is hitting the fan now, is that people have run out of credit. They've run out of credit.
Some
people, but a lot of people. They've run out of credit. They've run out of equity in their house. They have maxed out their credit cards. Bankruptcies are up. Foreclosures are up.
Right.
That's the whole point. Is that the issue is that the party may be coming to an end. If it doesn't, and, you know, if you can revolve credit forever, then we would never have to pay the piper. But I think that's important.
I hope you're right. I think I still, for some reason, think it's optimistic. I think for some reason that I hope you're right, but from my experience, I think that people will go on getting themselves in debt, buying new credit cards. I don't think that shit's going to stop. I mean, the basic foundation of the country is a debtor nation.
People are buying less cars.
Well, that's good.
I mean, car sales are down.
Yeah.
You've got more foreclosures. You've got gas demand has dropped off. Slightly.
People are siphoning gas again. They're siphoning gas.
You got truckers who are striking? I mean, what are they going to do at $7 a gallon?
Well, that's why I think the whole thing's going to come crashing down. I mean, you seem to think that it's not going to hit a bottom.
No,
but I think it's going to hit a profound bottom.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when it does, there's going to be an opportunity. I was just talking in the context of the perspective of the Republicans. When it does come down... Dude, everybody up here is all just—it's all counselor all the time. People up here clusterfuck.
What are you walking? Are you walking around door to door handing out books?
Well, I actually am building like a little electric motor scooter that I can plug in.
Do you go to town hall meetings? Do you go to town hall meetings upstate New York with counselor books and tapes of yourself talking?
I don't have to.
And say, listen, people.
Everybody's got them. My My cousin used to own a car dealership. They just sold it. They had it for years. And when they sold the car dealership, they had one of these, like, tiny, it's almost like an electric car. It is electric, but it's almost like a golf cart. But it's got that sort of big hump in the front and then a flatbed. You know, they use these at sporting events, like when guys, you know, hurt themselves on the field, they take them off this way. So the people who bought the car dealership didn't want it because it's sort of useless, you know, except for in very narrow circumstances. And my cousins couldn't keep it in Worcester because you can't register it. And they had no room. So my dad put it on a trailer and brought it out here. And as I'm driving around this thing, actually hauling a lot of brush and stuff and wood posts because we're expanding our garden to pictures forthcoming, folks. I realized, like, in 5 or 6 years, this thing only goes about 18 miles an hour, but I can take this thing on the main roads, and the only thing I have to worry about are armed militia that may prevent me from getting into town, because there's going to be no cars. And I got news for you. Prices on gas are not going down. And, you know, what you're going to see is, I think you're going to see, you know, things like, a huge reversal on the perspective of public transportation under a veto-proof Congress and a veto-proof Senate.
Let's start there. That all sounds well and good. Okay, so let's say the public changes its perception of public transportation out of necessity. Okay?
Which
given the way
already,
cities are structured.
Ridership is already up.
Fine. That's great. But how are they going to be able to make it more efficient? How are they going to be able to service cities like Los Angeles? How are they going to be able to put infrastructure in place in a reasonably fast way? How is that going to happen?
Well, they're
Have you been to Los Angeles?
Yes, and they actually had trains there for a long time, so it's certainly
I know until GE or GM put them out of business.
Right.
Yeah.
But the point is that first of all, efficiency, I don't know what you mean by efficiency. But there is no rail, national rail system in any country in the world that runs on a profit. Nowhere. So what you're
I understand that, but
things like Amtrak.
I'm saying is that if you need to take a bus in Los Angeles, okay, if you need to get somewhere in public transportation, you have to leave the day before. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand. But you're going to have to see that direction. There's no other option.
I'm all for it, but I hope it happens. I believe you're right that there is no other option. There is no alternative. What I'm saying is that that is being non-cynical and hopeful,
and that
will happen.
I'm not non-cynical and hopeful. I'm saying at one point, you know, you can sustain this, but gas has gone up. Like 300% in 6 years. If this happens,
all I'm saying is that
you're going to have to do it.
All I'm saying is that it's not going to happen easily. It's going to be messy. There are going to be scenes on the street. There are going to be escalations of public anger. Most people when they get pissed off, they don't do it necessarily in a political way. I'm just concerned about the amount of violence and rage and weirdness that's going to happen in public spaces that isn't about getting their elected officials to do the right thing, but just about people not being able to serve their own selfish needs and reaching a level of frustration around that that's going to make make public life a little disconcerting and uncomfortable.
What I'm saying is that I don't think people are going to start a petition to get more public transportation there. What I'm saying is that when you start to get what you're suggesting is going to happen, that's when you start to see public officials actually address problems because it becomes the stability of society becomes an overwhelming force. I mean, the trade-off will ultimately be for Los Angeles will be, all right, we've definitely got to put in a more robust public transportation. We just won't put it on the east side. We just won't allow minorities to get over to Brentwood. And as long as we do that,
no, they're
going to
have
it.
Yeah, but if you don't let minorities get over to Brentwood, the gardening's not going to be done. No one's going to work in the restaurants. The minorities already know how to get to Brentwood on public transportation. I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is that I think you're right, though. I think that if the news media starts covering these, public conflicts over being able to get places or being able to afford things, that there will be no choices but to make changes. But I think those changes are going to be small. Contracts have to be made. I mean, you're talking about years and years of work to change something that is fundamentally broken to its core. I mean, you're saying that there's going to be a paradigm shift out of necessity. And that paradigm shift, if it is to public transportation or it is to reusable fuels or a more sustainable type of fuel, that's going to take years. And I'm all for it, but I'm just saying we're heading into some dicey times, America. And to sit back and say, this is going to happen and that's going to happen and it's going to have to happen out of necessity. What the next 10 years look like, if the shit keeps going the way it's going to be very exciting and very frightening. That's what I'm saying. And that change is not going to happen just because people are depressed and they can't afford a gallon of gas. It's going to be because people are frustrated, they're pissed off, they're out of work, and then they can't afford a gallon of gas, and they can't get to where they're going. I mean, the militia scenario is more reasonable to me. How many people are going to head for the hills? I don't know. I was in Idaho last week, Sam. Idaho. Idaho is where people buy property just to keep people off it. Idaho is the core of libertarian land. And there was moments where I'm like, can I disappear into Idaho? I don't think so. Then there's Portland. So I'm in Portland for a day. I don't know anything about Portland. I'd like to live in Portland. Do I know anything about it? I don't. Have I ever spent time there? No. But here's what I'm saying, Sam. When the going gets tough, the sensitive relocate to a more comfortable area, to a more supportive community.
Klug, one of Sam Cedar Show bloggers,
he came to my show.
Has sent an email. Did he tell you about the bakery? He said he had located a bakery. You said some time ago that you wanted to be a baker, and he said you could open up this work at this bakery, maybe have a small performing space. Spayaf says what Mark is saying makes me worry that we could have riot scenarios like your guest blamed for killing LBJ's initiatives. What Spayaf is talking about is I spoke to Rick Perlstein from who wrote that book Nixon Land. The difference is that the riots came after the beginning of these initiatives, and in many respects killed them. What Mark is outlining and what I think I'm suggesting is that riots would actually initiate and be the catalyst for certain initiatives, because at one point, when society becomes too unstable, there's only, one way. Like, you have to understand that in the 60s, what happened was you had a strong middle class that felt financial security, and the idea of being arrested for a protest or the idea of going out and exercising your political will had no price to pay, because people perceived, I'm going to have a job anyways. So I can actually afford
this luxury of
protest. And so the difference in this scenario is that people are going to be protesting not because they have the luxury to, but in spite of the fact that they don't have the luxury to.
Yeah, but Sam, in the 60s, the thing is, unfortunately, in the scenario I'm describing, you're going to have to rely on the news media's hunger for chaos and fear-mongering for it to cover the shit properly. Because in the 60s, whatever the economic breakdown may have been, the luxury of protest was not only culturally acceptable, but actually possible. Now when you have a free speech zone set up in the town next to where the protest is supposed to be, everything's cordoned off in sort of police states that happen overnight on a temporary basis, that the sad thing about the future possibility of protest is that it's not going to come off as protest, and it's going to require the media to cover it in such a way that really exemplifies or shows the desperation of middle-class people. We're going to have to rely on the media to capture it correctly, because there's no such thing as organized protest that has any effect anymore. It's so easily trivialized and easily cordoned off by the powers that be that it doesn't even function as that anymore.
Yeah, but the scenario you're talking about is beyond protest. You're talking about quasi-violence.
That's right. So, but that's what I'm saying is that that's how it looks now because we are not community. There is no sense of community in a broad way like there was in the 60s in the sense that some people put on protests in their town. Some people put on protests that, you know, happen a few blocks away. What I'm saying is that we are a nation of selfish fools and that the only way this is going to go down, in my mind, is that enough selfish fools are going to get frustrated at the same time. It's not going to be a community movement. It's just going to be a percolating of chaos out of personal frustration that becomes a cultural mode, that becomes something that everyone is experiencing, and outbursts of certain types of situations are going to happen simultaneously. I don't believe that it's going to be, you know, a broad-based community political movement. You know, outside of the elections, I just feel that most people are selfish and most people don't realize that they're at the end of their ropes quite yet. But when people start getting to the end of their ropes, it's going to happen relatively simultaneously, and there's going to be something percolating in a lot of different places that's going to require attention. And that's going to take the place of a mass movement. That's my prediction.
Well, that's my point, is that it creates instability in society. I mean, you know, the big thing, and we're already seeing all the signs of these problems. You know, you're seeing, like, real estate prices in the exurbs, in the far suburbs, you're seeing them drop faster than you do in urban environments. And, you know, what's going to happen is people are going to start to gravitate closer to cities, but then the cities are going to feel the pressure and whatnot. I mean, the only place that's really safe is if, you know, if any of you folks are extremely, extremely wealthy, head to New York City, because fairly soon they're just going to put a gate around it and maybe call it New New York City. It'll be like just a massive gated community.
There already is a gate around it.
But the beauty is,
you can't spend a day in New York without spending $50.
The beauty is, though, is that there's only like three or four different supply lines into the city. Two tunnels, I guess three or four bridges, five bridges. So that could easily, we could easily surround the city and sort of choke off their supplies. But why would you? I mean, what do you get? It's not like there's anything great going on in the city, except for all.
Well, maybe here, Sam. Maybe what you can do is organize enough of your listeners to actually, you know, take over New York and make it what it used to be.
If I get the 3-6 show, I'll do that.
See, now it's like all uncomfortable. We should be up for the job together, but we couldn't fucking pull that off.
What do you mean we couldn't pull that off?
Where was the time to do it?
Oh, dude. There was not enough will. Let's not go there.
Not enough will.
Yeah.
Are we going to have this? Is this going to happen on the air? Is this what we're going to do?
No. What you know? I'm not going there. You're going there. I did watch
this is how friendships deteriorate over business.
don't take it so seriously.
Just remember sacrifices we have made, my friend. How come I can't get my iChat to open? Yeah, all right. Yeah, you just remember, my friend. What's going on a personal level?
What are you talking
about?
What sacrifices?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, buddy. Hey, how come I can't open
my
iChat?
What are you talking about?
Nothing.
You don't want to open your iChat right now.
I don't.
Because that will compete with the video. The guy who found you in Brian. The guy who found you in Brian Park is I am.
He's saying that? Don't open the iChat, he said?
No, you should not open the iChat. Because it's just going to hog your... It's going to compete with your bandwidth.
So here's a couple of things. I've been on the road for a week. I've been in Newport, Kentucky. I've been in Chicago, Illinois. I've been in Fargo, North Dakota. St. Paul, Minnesota. I've been in Boise, Idaho, my friend. I've been in the middle of America. And you know what? There are people in Boise, Idaho that don't even know that they're in... this country. There are people, like, it's weird, you know, seeing people in the Midwest and feeling what the Midwest feels like, Sam. It's profound, the amount of space and distance between things and thoughts that is available in the Midwest of this country. That I start to really understand that if you're not in a city, if you're not in San Francisco, you're not in L.A., you're not in New York, if you're not in a condensed urban area where people are forced to engage, you really don't have to engage with anybody. And there's a profound sense of distance between people and between my mindset and their mindset. I mean, literally, Andy Kindler, Eugene Merman, and myself, if they didn't have an idea of how Jews behaved publicly, they do now. If there was not a precedent set for what a Jew is, they have one now. I was
that's
in Newport, Kentucky, across the street from a Waffle House.
Bridges.
Across the street from a Waffle House, and Andy and Eugene had to eat at the Waffle House three times in one day. So the staff of that Waffle House and whoever else had to eat there because their job, only enabled them to eat at Waffle House, to really not know what Jews were about, now have an idea that they travel in packs. They're initially charming, sometimes funny, a little needy, and don't know when to leave, and will spend a lot of time bickering over a bill. That's how they're going to see. That's the precedent set for the Midwest right now for the Jews. We are like a swirling Jewish vortex that enters any situation. Have you ever been anywhere with Andy Kindler? Have you ever had to spend any time with Andy Kindler? Traveling with Andy Kindler is like traveling with the history of Judaism, my friend. And in any social situation, no matter how mundane it is, he will create a almost a Talmudic environment for everybody. And I have to join in because I am programmed that way as well. And Eugene sort of acts as some sort of overseer of the situation, quietly behaving as if he's above it. But funny. These are funny guys, and it's been a funny tour.
How many more days do you have?
I got tonight in San Francisco. And then Thursday in Los Angeles. And then it's just, long. And then I go to the Sasquatch Festival on Memorial Day, and that's it. I mean, that is it, my friend.
The Sasquatch Memorial Festival? What, is he dead?
You're not even listening to me.
Is he dead?
Sasquatch is not dead. No, he closes the show every night, three days in a row.
It's a Memorial Day Sasquatch Festival.
That's right. No. All the Sasquatches will be there. It's their once-a-year thing. All the Sasquatches converge on George Washington. That is George Washington. And they dance. They do the once-a-year Sasquatch dance. No, it's a big music rock and roll fest up on the gorge, somewhere near something. So, Sam.
Yeah, Mark.
When does this... What else is happening? How's your kid? How's your life? You're planting blueberries? I can't wait to get home. I've been home in, like, it feels like 2 months.
It's been close.
I'm reading Taibbi's new book.
Strawberries.
I finished the Berman
blueberries
book.
And
yeah.
Maybe figs. It occurred to me, like, we spend a tremendous amount on blueberries for Mila, where I could go and for $25, I can get three blueberry plants, and I'll never have to do that again. I'm getting a bucket full of coffee grinds from the coffee shop across the street from my office and to make the soil more acidic. And all I've been doing mostly has been digging. I expanded the size of our garden, which was exhausting. And I just planted grapes. And that is it. We're freaking out. We don't know where to send Milo to school. And I am obviously looking also for a job as well as a plan B or C or D. And waiting for this.
What does that look like for you?
What does it look like for me?
In your head. Yeah, because I let's go over our plan Bs. Now, granted, you're strapped with wife and child. And I understand that. I sympathize. But I think it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. I think it's making you a grown-up. And I appreciate that.
Well, I really
and I respect all your efforts. What's your plan B, though? Give me the short list of plan Bs. I'm curious.
It's either go back into entertainment or Maybe do some type of internet thing.
All right, so what about...
So I have a
plan, so that's... Okay,
B-A
some sort of internet
and
thing.
B-B. I'm not sure which is B-A and which is B-B, but it has to happen quickly.
So it's either go back into entertainment.
Right.
That's broad and vague, and that can be a number of things. Or do some sort of internet thing, which we're doing. Yeah, and you're going to talk about the investment necessary off the air. Is that what I'm getting? All right, you want to hear about my plan
B's? What's happening with your HBO show?
What's been going through? Not going to happen.
They shut it down?
They're not going to make it.
Yeah, you already know that? Did Sue Nagel get a chance to see it?
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
He did?
Didn't want to do it.
Oh, that sucks.
Tell me about it, dude. But,
all right, so let's hear your...
There's always the...
let's hear your plan B.
Well, sometimes I think, like, maybe it's time to get the band together. Right? Hit the road, get in a van. Nothing like... You know, I've never played in a band, but I think maybe now's the time. The newest one yesterday was that perhaps I could find a job at a small college teaching something that I do.
Do you really think...
Or maybe,
in
the bakery
something?
Thing, but that's more of a... The big...
And with all
due respect? No, I don't know. Why wouldn't I? College is very vague now. I could teach Mark Marinology. I could create I could find a job at an open campus kind of school for a very small group of people that know my place in the world and teach Marinology.
Go teach at Bard.
Or, right, something like that. Or Hampshire. Maybe I'll get a job at Hampshire College. Or Reed. Maybe I'll get a job at Reed. Eugene Merman majored in comedy.
What? No. Are you serious?
At Hampshire.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, you just want to make your own major.
Benjamin says, existential anxiety 101.
Yeah, what else is there? Seriously. And then with occasional flourishes of hope and faith and excitement. Existential anxiety is the most reasonable assessment of what we're all going through. You can pretend all you want, but it's going to come back to that. And then you just add layers onto it that manufactures hope and responsibility. But beneath all that is the tingling, percolating existential anxiety that eventually gets leveled by some sort of cancerous growth or strange pain or just a big shot to the chest. Bang! And it's over. But I'm hopeful about this. I'm taking the Morris Berman approach. Hey, it's really bleak, but I know it, and there's nothing we can do about it. So do what you can. Good luck. Good luck to you.
There's that the guy who found... I told you about this, right? The guy who found the hole in the ozone layer. The scientist who found that. He's like this 85-year-old. There's a piece about him in, I think it was one of the British papers. I can't remember. Where he basically said... 2100, 80% of Europe is sub-Saharan. Within 40, 60 years, 80% of the world population dies. It's too late to do anything about it. So basically, enjoy yourself.
I've got to start enjoying myself.
Well, I mean, you know, that's fine. That would be, I mean, as difficult as that might be for you, but... What's really bad is what do you do with your kid? I mean, that's, you know, I'm just basically, I'm feeling like I got to teach Mila some serious, serious survival skills. On the upshot, she's only...
Well, how about you teach yourself survivor skills?
Well, I have a feeling at that point, it's going to be my survival skills are just going to be making sure that she can take care of me. But, the upshot is she's two and a half, almost, not quite three. She's about, she's two and a half, a little bit more. She's already skipping, which apparently is pretty good for kids, and she can snap her fingers.
You know what's weird, Sam?
I don't know if that's actually going to help.
Is that, but. You know what, Sam? You know, what's really interesting to me is that in traveling across country and seeing how much, you know, agricultural land we have, how much how much land there really is, and how real fundamentally, I think, decent American people are, that it seems that not unlike what I'm going through in my divorce, in the sense of, I have a wife who's entrusted a lawyer to hurt me. I'm not even sure that my wife knows what her lawyer has put me through exactly. But I think in a lot of ways that people who are victims in this country have a similar relationship, with the government. That, I think that we're in dire straits and that people are hurting, but they don't really make the connection between how the government has facilitated that or how the government is responsible for that, because it's just too big for their head, or they're not educated in the right way. Because if you look around at America, there's no fucking reason at all that this project should be failing. There just isn't any reason other than we've been sold out by, a series of administrations who have made decisions based on economic profiteering and doing whatever they can to privatize and avoid taking responsibility for the population and for the country itself. The fact that, that we're a debtor nation at this point, and that we've sold out everything and that we don't manufacture anything here, is fucking retarded. It's retarded given the vastness and the availability of what we can do as Americans. You just drive across this country, Sam, and you look like huge fields of grain and wheat. It's just like the song. It's all right there. How is it that we can't all get on the same page and create a better working model for this country? It's only because we have a bunch of idiots, just a parliament of whores that have sold out to private interests and corporations that have no national affiliation that don't give a shit about it. It's just, I'm not trying to be a libertarian here, but it just seems ridiculous that so many people cannot connect how they're being screwed by the government and what needs to be done on a civic level in an organized way. Well, maybe they are. Maybe that's why 75,000 people showed up for Obama. And I think what we need to talk about also, if we can for a second, Sam,
let me just address that, because to a certain extent, if you take a broader perspective on it, it may not be, it may be just the natural course of things. Everything has a half life, whether it's a good performance room or a country, that has aspired to empire. I mean, this is not the first time in history where you've had a grand project, a grand experiment that essentially ultimately goes amok. I mean, to a certain extent, we started with a cleaner slate, and maybe we just accelerated and burnt out quicker. I mean, who knows?
But it goes amok because it's sustained by intentionally or unintentionally ignorant or delusional people to only care about themselves. And I think that the momentum that you're seeing behind Obama...
It goes amok because people who aspire to power wealth, essentially... They take the society down with them. I mean, that's what it.
No, I understand that. But they've convinced enough people that those people are one of them or have enough to the one thing that frightens me, and the one thing that I'm seeing in terms of what we're talking about, in terms of when the gas prices go up, when the real estate market completely hits the bottom, when people are forced out of their house, is that people who think or who have been middle class are confronted with these realities. I don't think that their first idea is, how do we change this politically? How do we make changes? I think they see it as a personal financial problem, and they don't want their neighbors to know about it, and they're going to extend their credit as much as possible and maintain their denial and sustain it in any way they can, thinking that they can persevere. And I think this is going to be, ultimately, these are going to be the people hardest hit and the most people... and people who are going to be less prepared to deal with the consequences of this economy. I think you're right on a power level.
But do you think it was any different in 1935?
No, I don't. But I don't think that anybody has any real realization or understanding of what that looked like. I don't think it was any different.
I mean,
but I don't know what that looks like. Do you know what that looks like? Can you even fathom it really in your head?
I mean, it's definitely easier to picture it where I live. Because it's not so dramatically different from what exists now, but two, it's not as severe. I mean, the highs and lows in denser populations gets more dramatic.
Right.
I don't see, I don't see the money I used to see at all, obviously, in New York City. I mean, everywhere you turn in New York City, everything is just a huge amount of money. here, it's I don't see any of that. And, you know, if there was, people are much more self-sustaining. I mean, you talk about the distance in, you know, in Idaho. It's not the same up here, but it's not dramatically different. I mean, you know, it's the, you got to drive a long way to go places. People stay at home. They're more isolated. You know, there's a lot of libertarian ethos around here, a lot of property rights type of thing, and it's not based upon I'm going to make a lot of money. It's just like, you know, there's a lot of that, like, you know, I this is my road, and or, you know, I this piece of property is mine, and, you know, that's it. See you later. I mean, there's a lot of that type of culture up here.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. I've been recently concerned about, you know, what's interesting, what I just started to realize and what I was talking about initially is when Obama becomes president, you know, the biggest challenge that he's going to have is that, you know, whatever election, you know, whatever campaign promises he's making, and I really just started to think about this realistically, is that from day one, he's going to step into office and have to be functioning as a commander-in-chief at war.
He's like Hillary Clinton.
And
now.
The... What do you mean? No,
Clinton's argument.
Well, no, I'm voting for Obama. I'm not making a criticism about it. What my question is that in my mind, it's not about how he's going to react, you know, or what he's capable of. I have complete faith that he's capable of managing the situation and creating a relationship with the military, which is what brought Carter down, ultimately. And which is going to be a big challenge for him. But the idea still in my mind that the war is going to be over, that I don't hear anybody talking about this embassy. And it was interesting from this show, the embassy that they're building that's going to require 8,000 to 10,000 civilian and military workers and about at least 30,000 to 40,000 people to defend it. So that means that there's going to be a force there, even when all troops are taken out, there's going to be a force there of at least 80,000, I believe. And I think, you know, my question is, and the one thing you never hear anyone talk about except when someone emailed me on this show, is that there's a real reality that, given the state of Iraq now, that embassy could be overthrown, that we really don't know what's going to happen there. And if these idiots attack Iran before the end of the term,
right.
I don't know where that report in Israel came today. But if they attack Iran and whoever has to walk into that presidency, you know, after something like that, dude, we're just talking about the economy. If that becomes a reality, oh my God. Do you think that's still possible? I mean, I've always been one of these guys that said they can't possibly. I mean, even given Seymour Hersh's, you know, evidence and all this saber rattling, do you think that they're going to attack Iran before November?
I don't know. For a long time, I thought it was just a distraction, and I, you know, to a certain extent, I still think it is a distraction. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, I interviewed Mark Crispin Miller the other day, and afterwards we talked.
Boy, that must have been exciting and uplifting.
Yeah, I mean, he's as you know, you guys are in some ways a kindred spirit. No, you know, he was saying.
But he will always. We may be a kindred spirit, except, you know, at the end, I'll get a laugh sometimes.
He'll outdo you.
He won't get a laugh, dude. That Buzzkill Miller will suck it right down in the darkest places of hopelessness of you know, anybody. Hopelessness based on fact, my friend.
Well, he said. You know, he said, I can't imagine they're going to give up power that easily. I mean, again, you know, the best case scenario is that they attempt to impose martial law. You know, that's...
I know, but I, by the way, I heard that one.
Like, that's
how I don't buy that.
I mean, but I think, you know, attacking Iran at this point would also be one of those things where I don't think, and who knows, but I don't think that the American public, frankly, has the stomach or the patience for an attack on Iran.
I understand it, but
from a political standpoint, And you know what? I mean, I think...
The only thing that, like, let's just go back one second before we get too far into this, is that it seems to me that the idea of giving up power and the idea of this organization giving up power, these guys are the pawns and the representatives of what is now the functioning military-industrial complex. Now, any president is going to have to build a relationship with that entity. That's a given. So giving up power is not relative to the leadership. And that's basically what I'm saying, is that it's going to be interesting to see how Obama, as president, deliberates and negotiates and navigates that relationship with what is a fairly strong and profoundly privatized military-industrial complex. Because that's going to be the challenge. If anybody is going to take him down, it's going to be them. And that's not even being conspiratorial.
Well, L.K. Noel just emailed me and said the rumor on Democratic Underground is that Bush will attack Iran right before he leaves. So after the election, which actually he would do it after the election. And basically, you know, welcome to the White House.
Iran. But they said that about, you know, leading into 2004 elections, that they were going to blow something up. I mean, I understand that thinking, but I don't think it operates like that.
Well, the neocons feel that an engagement with Iran would force us to stay there, and they want us there. They genuinely believe.
I believe what they want to do with Iran. I think the only issue with Iran is that the only way they would attack Iran is if they knew they could kill Ahmadinejad. I believe that, you know. Yep. But I think that what they need, from my point of view,
authority. He's not the leader of that country.
Stupid people or the non-secular people who are involved in the government of Iran, symbolically or otherwise, I think that the reason they haven't attacked is that they don't know that they can get somebody in there that would be symbolically and on some level a leader that would directly align themselves with what they have, what they're trying to build in Iraq. That's my belief. That the only reason that they haven't attacked Iran is that they can't put somebody into place that could, you know, satisfy their desire to have control over the whole region with pawns that would work for them. That's my belief.
No one could possibly believe that we could overthrow the government. The only theory that the neocons could have in terms of... There's only two reasons why you would attack Iran from their perspective. One is that they believe a bombing run in some way would inspire the Iranian people to overthrow their government.
So you just contradicted what you said.
No.
You did. That's overthrowing the government. That's provoking an overthrow of the government.
Well, first of all, Ahmadinejad is really just a figurehead. But we can't install anybody. The idea would be that somehow this would inspire an Iranian revolt.
Okay, so that is a different language. Yeah, I understand. But the same means to an end. I believe that given the size of the embassy and given what that's we're going to require, is that no one's going to take us out of Iraq. There's going to be a functioning force of 80,000 people that they're going to be there to secure. I don't believe that there's any coming out of Iraq. And what I said was not much different than what you said. And that given that he is a figurehead, I understand that, but it is still a relatively, you know, non-secular country that tolerates a secular population only because it knows what's going on. But even with the parliament, it seems that Khomeini and the religious leaders who are aligned with the leaders in Iraq, who are subcontracting outsider, that the only means to an end in terms of the neocon agenda or attacking Iraq would be to facilitate some sort of different government, whether he's a figurehead or not. To make sure that they have or try to get power of that region. I'm just not buying the idea that even a Democrat is really going to pull all the troops out of Iraq. I think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, that's another question. I mean, I think it's unlikely, you know, that everybody will be out by the end of 2009, that's for sure. I don't know what will happen with the embassy.
It's a lie. It's just a lie.
Well, of course, it's very difficult to sort of disentangle yourself from that type of situation. But at one point, I think it's going to be clear, you know, as time goes on, there's just going to be less and less of a will for any type of major presence there. And the money.
But it's not an embassy. It's a fortress. And I don't know why you don't hear a lot of people talk about this. It's not like, you know, where we're going to have diplomats. I mean, what they built there is a fortress that resembles a city that is designed for a post-conflict management of the country. It's an occupying fortress.
Yes. No. I
and nobody and they don't talk about this. They don't pay one.
No. You mean the media? Does the media talk about it? No, of course not.
Well, I just think that even like someone like Barack Obama or even Hillary Clinton or anybody that, you know, in terms of being honest, that to say that, you know, what has been put in place by this administration in terms of an embassy is not really an embassy. It is a fortress designed to maintain a managerial force. And I don't, unless they're going to say, like, we're going to pull out of this billion-dollar project and make that embassy a reasonable embassy that's there to represent as opposed to maintain, then I think there's something disingenuous about the presentation.
Yeah, I don't know why they would. I don't know why they would say that now during the campaign, you know, per se. I mean, from a political standpoint, you know, if you poll Americans, I can imagine that the closing of the downsizing the green zone and the embassy is probably fairly low on their list at this point. But down the...
I'm just saying it's disingenuous to say that they're going to pull all the troops out, given that fortress is going to require, you know, tens of thousands of troops to support.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I guess you're right. So you're saying that they're, and I've said it too, that they're all really lying, and then the real challenge is how to sort of navigate in between the reality and those lies post-election.
Yeah, I mean,
I
you know,
that.
The notion that, you know, getting Obama into office is going to change things in and of itself is just naive. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, the question is, like, from a political standpoint, you know, how are we set up with progressives in the House? How are we set up in the Senate? How much power do outside groups have? How much agitation comes from the public? And, you know, how bad does things get economically on the you know, in the country? You know, the idea that one guy is going to come in there and change anything is like elementary school thinking. It's not there needs to be a whole alignment of different forces.
And don't underestimate the American population's ability to be elementary school
hey,
level.
Dude, I remember in 92, I think I was there with you. Weren't we in Cobb's Comedy Club the night that Bill Clinton won the election in San Francisco?
Maybe.
I just remember standing around a TV, and I think it was in Cobb's, watching everybody cheer when Bill Clinton was elected president. And I looked around, I'm like, a sigh of relief, maybe, folks, but a fucking cheer? And I don't know. I guess we've come full circle with Clinton anyways.
Any IMs?
Puns here.
I'm in San Francisco tonight. Why can't I open my IM? Why is it stopping me? The only thing I'm doing differently today is I'm on Safari and not Firefox.
I do not know. I'm not Mac savvy. Let's see. Obama has the best chance of changing the world's perception of us. That's definitely true. Uh, PB Truth says,
I love the guy. I'm on board. I'm on board.
Bill Maron, you get back what you put in. These kids are processed, not taught. Not sure. Let's see.
Processed, not taught. That's pretty good.
Janice wants to talk more about Obama not wanting donations to go to outside groups. Some people I know are really, really worried about this. Some people not so much. At first, when this sort of came out, people perceived it as simply a sort of a political purge of, because a lot of these organizations have a lot of people who have been Clintonites, and there was some perception that there was a certain amount of distrust. Other people have said Obama wants control of his message and is afraid of outside people stepping on that message, that he's got a very specific pitch that he wants to make to to the American public. Other people are very concerned that it's going to start to inhibit the sort of broader growth of a progressive infrastructure. I don't know what else to make of it beyond those things. Lance Ordinoff sending my cash to Hillary to help pay off that debt. Fair enough, Lance. Thank you, Neffer. Missed you as well. M. Heller. F. Many in the military are breaking with Bush and the neocon perspective. Yes. Eddie Budd says, how condescending.
What?
What was the Jerusalem Post story?
That an unnamed American military or White House source said that there was a plan to attack Iran before Bush left office, and the White House denied it.
Right. Okay. Marin could teach at Eugene Lang. Can Obama herd cats like that to keep free-thinking people from doing what they want with their dollars? Well, the idea, Tripp, is not so much that small donors would not support these organizations, but a lot of these organizations get their money from big, big, big donors. And, you know, it depends on why people contribute to a presidential campaign. If they want access, and he's saying, you know, if I find out you gave money to X organization, you know, I won't invite you to the inauguration or something. I don't know.
So when they give big money to these organizations, if large donors give big money to these organizations to support a candidate, and then that candidate gets in, then the understanding becomes that the organization has a place at the table, and hence that donor, so they do it by proxy? Is that what it is? That the person who gives the most money to the organization that is giving the money to the candidate will then have power?
No. It's not about organizations giving money to candidates. They're outside organizations, like, you know, 503 or 527s that are formed to do anti-McCain stuff. There's organizations like, I don't know, like, you know, veterans organizations.
But still.
Or organizations like...
But what I'm saying is what you're saying that the reason that he would stifle that is that so he doesn't have political favors to those organizations?
No. It's so that he can control the message. If you starve these other organizations of cash, they can't do as much.
To influence the campaign.
You know, he's basically saying, give me the money, and I will dole it out.
Right.
Gulfstream 2, do you have a perceived timeline for the Air America decision? My guess is within the next 3 weeks. Does the parallel of Obama equals Dean equals Clinton equals Kerry hold up? I don't think so. Stashian. Lance Ordonov, what decision? Who's going to get 3 to 6 p.m.?
I don't really even feel like
it. All right, folks.
I don't feel like it.
You don't feel like what?
I don't feel like, I'm heading north.
What?
I'm done with this shit, dude.
You don't feel like you're heading north?
I am heading north. I'm done with this. I'm done with these games.
What are you talking about?
I know what I'm talking about.
You going to Canada? Is that a... All right, folks, this is a weird way to end the show. Let's take one more. Oh. Fractal says, move to Iceland or Norway, and you'll like that more than Canada.
I'm not going to Canada. I'm not going to... I'm just going to go up into San Gabriel's so I can still get...
Don says...
down to
Finland
get food and stuff.
Better.
I have fans in Finland.
Yeah, we have someone watching.
I do. Let's do
Finland
it.
Right now.
I'm in San Francisco tonight, and I'm in Los Angeles on Thursday. Yep. Yeah.